Wildfire season is coming. We know that much. But what we do not know yet, or really can, is how severe it might be. But given the lack of snow over the winter and how dry many of our forests are, the potential for a pretty rough fire season is there. And it's not just our region, but the whole country taking part in Wildfire Community Preparedness Day. That's a national Wildfire Community Preparedness Day, the first of its kind, scheduled for May 3rd. What is it all about? For that, we turn to Kathy Prudhomme, who is with the National Wildfire Protection Association as the Associate Project Manager in the Wildlands Fire Operations Division, which is a heck of a long title. But Kathy, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
So tell us about the creation of the... First of all, let's find out more about your organization, National Wildfire Protection Association.
Well, it's actually the National Fire Protection Association, so it's NFPA, and we work through education and advocacy and codes and standards to reduce the fire risk, not just from wildland fires, but fires in homes and structures throughout the world. So we do that through all of those different components that we do, and we're a nonprofit that's been around since 1895.
1895?
Yeah, a long time.
All right. So let's talk about the creation of then Wildfire Community Preparedness Day and then how the idea came about and why it actually didn't come about sooner.
Well, I'll tell you how it came about. As part of, through our advocacy, we go to communities where there have been large-scale wildland fires. And in 2012, following that big season, we picked six different cities that had had very large destructive wildfires. And we talked to community members about what they wish they had known before the fire, during the fire, after the fire, what they want to know now. And we heard time and time again that people said, we wish that there had been opportunities for us to know more and reduce our risk long before the fire came. But those opportunities just weren't there. Whether they came on the local level, on a municipality level, there weren't things for them to do as a community. So we talked about that and we investigated it and we thought this is a time to dedicate this one day. It's not the only day we think about wildland fire or the only day that we do proactive risk reduction activities, but it's a day about educating, empowering, and motivating residents that live in an area where there's a risk and asking them to participate in activities that reduce the chances of them losing their home in a wildland fire.
So what kinds of activities then?
You know, the beauty of this is the activities can be undertaken by anybody, middle school and older age groups, to help get them started. We created a broad range of projects. Some take less than an hour. Others could take the whole day or an entire weekend. And that list of 25 potential project ideas are on our website at wildfireprepday.org. And most of those can be accomplished without power tools. We're not saying you need your chainsaw or any monetary cost. It's really about working with neighbors or just your own family at your own individual home and doing some projects that will reduce the risk if and when that fire comes.
So we're really talking essentially to people who live kind of on the edge of town, I mean, where town is giving way to forests and open areas like that?
You know, that is the traditional way that people address wildland fire areas. So do you abut a national forest or a state forest land or an area that maybe is a large privately owned area where that wildfire could start in there and then move into the homes? But we also want to expand that distance out because during a wildland fire, what happens is when those windblown embers are blowing around in that event, they can blow up to 2 miles away. So they'll land and potentially start another fire, and those embers can blow again. So you don't have to directly abut an area that we would think of as a typical wildfire area.
So some of the things that we learn from firefighters in our region, like setting up defensible space around your home, not just limited to the people who live right there on the edge of the forest, but a good distance from it, too, as well. Should those people be doing things like clearing areas out around their house to make sure that the fires can't spread from brush to house?
Absolutely. And it's really easy. It's not rocket science. We kind of like to refer to it as extreme gardening or extreme landscaping. And for those people that don't consider themselves part of a traditional wildland urban interface, they could start with that area if they stood out in front of their home and they imagined an imaginary line that's 5 feet away from the home's foundation. And they looked at it that way and they started looking at the things that they could do, maybe hardscaping close to the house, look at the types of vegetation that are planted up next to their windows, because what happens is when we're talking about those embers coming in from quite a big distance, and if they land on some type of a pine that's in front of a window, the oils and resins in that plant are very flammable. So if that catches on fire and that's planted right in front of a window, the fire can gain access into that home through that window, because the heat is going to cause the glass to break or the window frame to kind of bend a little, and that'll break, and the fire is going to enter through that window or through vents or other things. So look at that first 0 to 5 feet around your home and start doing some basic cleanup and hardening the foundation and the things around it in that area.
I'm going to guess, Kathy Prudhomme, there's a certain amount of resistance from some people to doing the defensible space thing, simply because it probably doesn't make it as pretty for landscaping purposes. You know, people like trees up close to the house, the shade from the trees, et cetera. And what you're talking about then is more space there between the house and the brush and the trees.
You know, we do hear those comments a lot. And basically, we understand that a lot of people move to those areas for those aesthetic purposes. But 0 to 5 feet around your house is not very far. And if it can save your home and it can save the trees that are around your home, wouldn't you rather live with that little bit of clearance than have to come home to a home and there's no more trees? Or for years and years and years, going to look out at a very scorched landscape full of burnt trees. Little tiny things have been proven time and time again to save homes. And if that fuel's not on fire, the fuel being your home, it could also save the trees around your home. So we want to think about the big picture and the long term. So can you do without a little bit of vegetation around your home and save your home in the forest? I think that's the way we need to look at it. And we'll hear time and time again from people, too, that by clearing some things around, they actually got a better view. They actually got the birds and some wildlife. They could see that better around their homes. So there's a lot of positives to doing it.
Kathy Prudhomme is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's with the NFPA, the National Fire Protection Association. And we're talking about the first ever National Wildfire Community Preparedness Day on May 3rd. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Do you have much buy-in from the various fire agencies around the country, state forestry departments and national firefighting units?
I will say every year the buy-in grows and grows and grows, because what we're seeing is when people do wildfire mitigation and when they take FireWise concepts and apply them to their properties, what happens is it also makes it safer for firefighters to come in and fight that fire. So many times we'll hear from firefighters that they start triaging homes, and if they have to make decisions on picking two or three homes that they can go in and defend, they're going to pick ones that have created defensible space and have done wildfire mitigation over ones where they could go in and the vegetation is so thick and they've done nothing that really it endangers their safety too.
This is a Saturday, isn't it, May 3rd?
It is, Saturday, May 3rd.
And I imagine the timing's no particular accident, because it's getting close to fire season. Fire season may have already started in parts of our region by the time May 3rd rolls around, and I'm sure that's no coincidence that you're scheduling it then.
You know, because this is a national day, we had to look at a day that's going to apply to everybody. So there's some areas that are already well into their fire season and some that are saying, well, ours is still not for many months. But the point of the day is to really create that awareness and start building some social capital amongst neighbors and understanding fire doesn't know boundaries. So if you're not working with your neighbors on both sides or around your property to make sure that you're all working together to create that defensible space, you're increasing your odds by forming that bond and having that understanding that we're in this together.
When we look at the severity of wildfire increasing, and as you pointed out, some places already in their fire seasons in places like Southern California and the desert states of the Southwest, are there things that at the NFPA, the National Fire Protection Association, you're thinking of recommending in the way of changes in building codes or roofing materials or anything else that could be done potentially to ensure at least that much more protection from wildfire for homes that are close to wildlands?
We do have a whole division that works on standards and codes and developing those, and then it's up to that jurisdiction to adopt them or to change them so that they fit in their community. What Wildfire Preparedness Day is really empowering the residents, because codes and other things have to go through this whole regulatory process. And on this day, we want people to take that power and do what they can do at their own level without those regulations. And then hopefully those will evolve with time.
When we talk about that, the 5-foot defensible space, and I know that, that some places recommend even more than that, but are we talking about not even having grass up to the house, that sort of thing?
If you have grass, there's and it's okay to have grass, but we want to make sure that it stays mowed. You never want your grasses around your house to get more than 4 inches high. You want to make sure that it's green grass. It's not grass that has died and that it's cured, and just a single ember on there can start that fire. And really, we talk about it being the home ignition zone, and there's 3 zones. So that first one is the 0 to 5 feet. The second zone is the 5 to 30 feet area, and then zone 3 goes 30 to 100 feet out. But if you haven't done anything, working on that first zone is the best place to start.
What would go on in that second zone, the 5 to 30 foot zone? Anything different from what goes on in the 0 through 5?
You know, it's a little bit different because the objective in that area is to create and maintain a landscape that won't readily transmit the fire to the house as well. So the trees and shrubs in that zone should be spaced differently. You can space it in groups. It should be well maintained. What we call ladder fuels, which is that shorter vegetation or shrubs that are under taller trees, we want to cut that down so the fire stays on the ground and doesn't get up into the treetops. And it's really easy to envision that when you look out, that that shorter vegetation and shrubs can carry the fire up into the treetops. And at that point, firefighters are probably going to pull out because it's harder to control and it's more dangerous. So if we can keep the fire on the ground, that's where we want it to be.
And called ladder fuels for a reason, because the fires will, in fact, climb those shorter bits of vegetation to get up into the crowns.
Absolutely, yeah. And really looking at the spacing of the trees, the optimal thing is to have at least 10 feet between the crowns of the trees, but that distance needs to increase if you're on a slope, because fire travels very quickly up slope.
Okay, all kinds of good ideas to put into play for the upcoming wildfire season. This is National Wildfire Community Preparedness Day. We're talking about Saturday, May 3rd. Kathy Prudhomme is with the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, and she's been our guest on The Exchange. Kathy, thanks so much for your time today on The Exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
You bet. Good to have you.